Hello, my name is Paul Askew, and I'm, you know, sort of the editor of Ferment. I've already lost my place. Right, yes, you know what, I'm just going to read it. It's going to be a lot less embarrassing. Hello, my name is Paul Askew. As well as being the official sex symbol of the Oxford poetry scene, I am the editor of Ferment, which is a rather grandiose term for what I actually do and makes me sound rather a lot more important than I am. In reality, I'm the curator of the written content for the zine. What that means is that basically I find writers that I like and that I think that James and Sarah would be happy with putting in our magazine, and I ask them to submit an original piece of writing for us based on our issue's theme. And the extent of my editing is really just sort of checking for typos and errors in all of the writing in the sort of final draft of our zines before they get sent to the printers for printing up. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history of Ferment, specifically how we got started. Once upon a time, James and Sarah were on a rather tedious train journey, the sort of thing where the air conditioning isn't working, people are being loud in the quiet carriage, people are knocking your shoulders off with their luggage because they have a phenomenal lack of self-awareness. Now, James and Sarah met on this train journey and started chatting to each other. And because they're very sociable creatures, they didn't think, who the fuck's this weirdo talking to me on a train? Why won't they stop talking? Are they going to stab me or something? Like most of us would do. No, instead, they started talking and became friends. Which is just weird. Now, they kind of, you know, did the being friends thing, getting to know you thing. And they were both going to this event, but run by DNAD. It was like a sharpener event, they're called. Well, that's what I've got written here anyway. And this event that they went to was based on zines. And so they kind of met up and went to this thing, and they were on their way home, and they were like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we made a zine? And so they came up with the idea for Ferment. Now, the idea of behind Ferment is basically, as I said before, we have a theme, and we match up writing, and we give to illustrators. We give these bits of writing that we get into illustrators, and they draw us up a nice little illustration, and we put the things together in this nice little sexy thing. And it looks really sexy because James and Sarah's backgrounds are in design, and so they know how to make things look good, but they don't really know a lot about writing. And so that's where I come in, because I'm a budding writer, and James and I have been friends for a number of years now. So that's how I got involved. And the one thing we all had in common was that we were all sort of looking for something creative to do, because at that point, we were all a little kind of dissatisfied with our day-to-day lives. James and Sarah were in full-time jobs that weren't particularly stimulating them as much as they would like. I was working part-time in a job at a place I had at that point been for 8 years, on and off. Not on and off, I'd been there the whole time, and it's 11 years now. And this was, but you know, back then, this was when I was still doing my creative writing BA at Ruskin College, just down the road there, and I was in my second year, and I was looking to sort of work out how to make this kind of thing more of an active part of my life. And so this opportunity came along, and I was like, yeah, let's do that. Basically, we all had this kind of creative itch, and this beautiful little thing here is how we relieve that itch. Stop it. Okay, right, yes, now back to the writing side of things, because that is sort of what I'm supposed to know about. The thing about Ferment is it's really a vanity project, because we don't make any money off it, and I don't think we especially really ever intend to. So basically, I just pick people I like, and people that I've kind of, because I'm a poet, I do sort of events where other poets do things, and I go, yeah, you're good, I want some of that. And I ask them. And when it started, it was just sort of like people I know. And then as it goes on, I'm sort of aware that there's more of a need to kind of keep things, you know, varied. And it's one of those kind of interesting things that you sort of have to start thinking about more as things go on. And you sort of, because, you know, my vanity wants people to have an interesting reading experience rather than just, you know, read the same thing over and over and over again. And yeah, that's the end of that. Right, now I'm going to read you something that has been... just get in my little box of tricks. Right, so this is the bit where I read you something that we've published. And the thing is, because we have had such a variety, it's kind of difficult to know one thing to pick that will represent us. This is our current issue. And I'm going to pick... It is upside down because that's the theme. It's actually not upside down. That's the really clever thing about it. And so I'm just going to read my my personal favorite piece from the current issue, which just sort of completely coincidentally happens to be by my girlfriend. writer from Manchester called Sharness Rathore. And this poem is, it's a list poem, and it's called 20 Ways in Which I Perpetuate the Rumor That I Have Eloped with Someone Everyone Thinks I Have Eloped with Because of a Short Story I Wrote Once That Discussed the Theme of Elopement, because I am rather arch and quite hilarious. And this is the poem. One. On Twitter, I occasionally refer to him as my better half. I sometimes hashtag better half when speaking about him. Two, sometimes when we walk into a restaurant or bar together, I will use a marriage-y kind of phrase in a loud stage whisper to him. Example, I'm thinking duck eggshell blue for the guest room. Three, I have started to refer to his friends as our friends. If someone I know has spoken to him even once, they are our friend. Four, I discuss openly how me and him do not sleep together, but that's just what happens, I suppose. Five, I have started to become friends exclusively with couples because now that I am possibly married, I want to see single people as diseased, deformed, and hunchbacked loners. Six, I have started to discuss my love of cooking and cleaning, and I have stopped being a feminist. Seven, I make him call me once a day, preferably when other people are around. I say on the phone things like, oh, what are you like? And that is so you. To reinforce the notion that I share a strong, almost psychic bond with him. Eight, I have started to act as if I have moved up one social class because everyone knows that he was privately educated at a boarding school and I come from pretty rough and wanton beginnings. Nine, I tell our friends how much my mother likes him. 10, I tell our friends how much his mother hates me. 11, I encourage public arguments between the two of us over the middle names of our future children. 12, I am talking to my friends about how marriage doesn't scare me, but mortgages do. Then I follow it with, however, he earns a good wage and the pension is insane. 13, I have stopped talking to attractive women because I want to give off the impression that I see them as a threat. I figure if I'm going to be a wife, I may as well deliver an astonishing performance. I have also banned him from having girlfriends because then people will know something is up. 14, I have started using summer as a verb. 15, I have told everyone about our friends in Wiltshire. They're a wonderful couple and have been married 10 years. They are expecting their second child. Heaven knows how she puts up with it. She is such a saint to him, and he's a bloody martyr for having that job in that bank. 16, I discuss in company how I have become widowed to Skyrim and Dead Space. 17, I have got a gym subscription because I am now inexorably focused on keeping trim and looking nice. 18, when talking about his Aunt Josephine, I refer to her as Aunt Josephine rather than your Aunt Josephine. 19, I tell people we are thinking of making pots of jam and elderflower champagne as Christmas presents this year. The jam won't be a patch on Aunt Josephine's, though. 20, I show them the marriage certificate, photographs of the day, and wedding rings because I eloped with him. Okay, thank you. And now I am going to hand you over to the rather more professional than me, Sarah Plant.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll give it a go. Okay, so as Paul said, we are Ferment, and we're a non-profit project. But even though we're non-profit, we still wanted to distribute nationally and in local shops. These are some of the local shops that we've got Ferment issues in at the moment, or have done in the past. The brand that we wanted to create was promoting us as professionals and also the writers and illustrators we commissioned. So for us, it was really important that we created something we were really proud of. Around this time, the Newspaper Club were making some noise. They were just starting up and we were keen to give them a go. Newspaper Club were rethinking the huge amount of spare capacity on the national newspapers' printing machines. Not wanting to be pigeonholed as a parish newsletter provider, they set about providing printing services for art, music, travel, and food. As well as that, Newspaper Club were super speedy. They were an easy service. They saved us from all kinds of screw-ups, like when illustrators slap-dashed an image over to us that was the wrong kind of format, and they were a nice bunch. Also independent and inexpensive, we decided Newspaper Club were the ones to print our zine. When we started Ferment Zine, Newspaper Club were on litho printers, and we could only afford black and white. With our limited money and choices, the 12-page black and white newspaper became the start of our brand. We chose two classic typefaces, Bodoni and Futura. They both look quite different, but they're quite a good pairing because they're similar proportions. This worked really well when contrasting typefaces throughout the zine with bios and the written poems and stories. Bodoni poster was used for our masthead and overall brand. Its bold journalistic styling created a striking brand. We used the other weights throughout the zine to kind of tie it all together. On the whole, the design of Ferment is quite minimal. We focus on the content. Everything we've designed is designed for functionality. The folios are there for navigation. The small blocks next to the bios indicate whether it's an illustrator or a writer. And the theme in the footer reminds you of the theme. What was important to us was making the content work and how the two pieces of content related together, the illustration and the written piece. The idea was to pair up the illustrators and the writers previously who hadn't met and create something that was a different interpretation from the individual submissions. I guess we like to think of ourselves as the Cilla Black of the zine world. We didn't waste any time with complicated briefs. We just created a simple theme for each issue. This gave us a focus and the brief for the writers. The writers submitted pieces, poems and stories, and this their interpretations of the theme. Some of the most interesting were about food-related memories. This one in particular is about how potatoes are seen as porn. We have issues later on if you'd like to buy one. and how people interpreted our single letter issue. The writer's poems and stories became the brief for the illustrators. By selecting a poem or written piece for the illustrator, it challenged them to interpret someone else's work and also kept it interesting for us. Pairing up the writers and illustrators was the best part. Pairings are based on whether it's the style of the work, the personality, the best fit of the layout, or just the leftovers. How the contributors are paired and where they go in Ferment Zine determines the tone of that issue. Although the zine is a non-profit zine, we still would like to keep the integrity and the brand strong. So what do they get in return? Well, we are honest from the start. We say we can't pay them, but in return, we publish their work, we promote them, we distribute nationally, and also they get a free copy. By using Twitter to find new work, We've been able to find people from California, Canada, and Barcelona, and distributed as far as Singapore. Facebook has also helped us in reaching audiences that wouldn't ordinarily read poetry. After a couple of issues, our content was getting better. We were attracting some big names, and we updated the format and moved to digital printing. The online sales were going well, and although our local stockists really loved the zine, we often had feedback that the customers thought it was a free newspaper. So how did we solve this? Ferment is about the experience. We didn't want to wrap it in cellophane and hide it from the user. We wanted, and also that would be tacky and too expensive. Instead, we rolled up each issue and wrapped it in a black belly band. The black belly band was then sealed with a matte vinyl sticker, which we got printed cheaply with our logo and website. For us, Ferment is a communication tool. It's given us opportunities to write guest posts for Creative Boom, Mag Culture, and Newspaper Club. We've been part of local events such as the Oxforks Locally Sourced and various poetry nights and music nights. Ferment has influenced all three of us in our work and published and promoted now over 80 writers and creative and illustrators. But most of all, it's really fun. And James is going to tell you a little bit more about another project that we've been playing around with.
Thanks, Sarah. Hello, I'm James Viner. During the day, I'm a designer on GovUK at Government Digital Service, but at night, I am, as you can see, the last third of Ferment. And I make sure that every issue gets out the door with some vestige of regularity, although these two make that a bit of a challenge. This evening, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the how and why of what we call Ferment Mini, which is basically getting the content from this, a lovely big newspaper, as you have seen, onto a till receipt like this. That's a 50p for scale, in case you've never seen a till receipt. not sure why I did that. It's kind of silly, but interesting, and it was fun. So why do we bother? To explain, or why would anyone bother, it's probably best for me to give you a little bit of history of why anyone would want to print onto till receipt paper if they aren't running a shop. Starting with, what is an internet-connected receipt printer anyway? James Darling will probably tell you about this afterwards in more detail. That an internet-connected printer will allow you to receive small bits of the internet on receipt-sized bits of paper from anyone who sets up a service to do it independently of a full-size computer. It could be anything from receiving, for instance, today's weather, to personal messages from your friends and family, to small publications like Ferment. So kind of like mobile apps, but more papery. The concept was dreamt up in 2006 by the designers Matt Webb and Jack Schultz, who have since founded Berg, where they work. And back then, they called it the social letterbox. Here's a social letterbox on your desk, printing social things. And they recently have realized this concept with Little Printer. Between their original concept and Little Printer, a few other people played around with the idea, like Tom Taylor. Also of Newspaper Club, coincidentally. He made something called Microprinter, and here you can see that it's telling him today's weather, some messages, and sort of where his friends are going to be today, which has all been sort of pulled in from other apps that he signs up to on the web. It was obviously a very personal service for him, and it printed out every morning, and on his way out the door, on his way to work, he could rip it off and have a little read. But obviously, quite a lot of work went into making that for himself. But if you know your way around a soldering iron and programming languages like Ruby or Python to build apps with, it's fairly simple to achieve something similar by connecting commodity point-of-sale printers like this to something like small computers like Arduinos or even Raspberry Pis. And if you want to have a go yourself, you could check out Adafruit's kit, which has all the bits and pieces and even has this sort of nifty laser-cut case. And of course, there's a little printer where all that bother is taken care of for you. For those of us who like making stuff, though, the best alternative little printer is Free Ranger's printer. which is a project by James Adam of Free Range. And it started off about a year ago with this, which he called Timmy Printface, when he decided he would have a go at taking the Arduino and cheap printer concept a little bit further. After much work, he ended up coming up with this, a hardware kit, and also a federated software system, which is all on GitHub. It's all completely free, and there's lots of good documentation for it. And so that anyone can build their own small internet-connected printers, produce customized content for them, and share that content with other people who also have small internet-connected printers, if you're into that kind of thing. So when I saw what he was working on, I had some ideas about how Ferment could use his system. James was kind enough to lend us the hardware and get us all set up, and within a day or two, I had a simple Ferment Mini system going. More nepotism there, that's my girlfriend's poem. It was satisfyingly easy to get it all working, even for a non-programmer like me. So why did we bother doing it? Especially when we spend a lot of time soliciting illustrations that cry out kind of for the sort of spacious format that a newspaper offers. Well, firstly, it was fun. I saw what James Adam was working on and also where Berg wanted to take Little Printer, and it was clear that all that was needed was quality content or a good idea to come up with something compelling. Secondly, it helps to extend our skills and stay creative, which is why we set up Ferment in the first place. Other benefits, it's a great way to extend people's awareness of Ferment, gives us an interesting story for us to tell, I hope it's interesting, and sort of sets us apart from other literary magazines, of which there are many. For example, if Ferment Mini was freely available via something like Little Printer, it would be a risk-free way for people to check out our content, and they may well go on to buy one or two other issues, which please, if you want to at the end. So what worked and what does it involve doing? I'm not going to go into too much technical detail, but I can highlight some of the basics and a few of the pitfalls. Your apps only need to output HTML and CSS to publish content. It's pretty simple, but it takes some work to get things looking nice. For instance, images need to be optimized to print well on low-resolution black and white printers. These printers do not do grayscale. Dithering helps to do this, but it means all images have to be pre-processed. I used Atkinson Dithering, and for those of you familiar with that, who used black and white Macs back in the 80s and 90s, you'll have seen it a lot. It's very nice. And something else familiar from that era is how low the resolution is. You only get 384 pixels of width to play with. But you do get lots of pixels vertically, so that's good. One frustrating limitation of the Free Range printer system is you can't use any old fonts. They need to be present on the server, as that is where the pages get rendered. Though at least you can run your own server and install them there yourself. This limitation also exists on Little Printer, but Berg have worked really hard to have a wide range of fonts that have, and they've done a lot of testing with them, so they can tell you which ones look good, and et cetera. But my bit of advice is just sort of make them really, really big and everything looks fine. So what didn't work? There's no way we could use this medium for all of the work we publish. For example, poems with long line lengths just don't fit. It's important that poems are reproduced as the writer intended, because you can't do something like split a line in two, because you could actually lose the original meaning that the writer's intended for that line. And reducing down the font size is not really an option either, because the resolution is so low. So a lot of the time, you just have to go, that poem's not going to work. Also, prose pieces ended up as ridiculously long printouts. This one here came out about half a meter long. That was a little bit impractical. So the advantage of printing on rolls of paper means it is hard to run out of space. But the downside is both practical and mechanical. It's not very comfortable to read something on a huge long scroll. And after printing a large amount in one go, the print head on thermal printers tends to overheat, and you can end up with a long, unsightly smear, and that's just embarrassing. So was it worth it? The amount of people with internet-connected printers is somewhat limited. But who knows where this concept could go, with Little Printer making it more consumer-friendly. It certainly adds a nice angle to Ferment, helps us stand out a bit and have some fun tinkering along the way. We haven't got any plans to build a service for real yet, but if there's enough demand, we might do it. Oxford has a long tradition of publishing and people who like noodling about, so why don't you give it a go? Just try it. That's what I was trying to say. Thanks!